Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the...
Hi, Jamie. It's you, Jamie. Don't be alarmed, but I think there's a guy following you. Maybe we should get that guard dog we talked about? Nothing too scary. Maybe like a Bichon with an attitude? You know, Progressive's collision insurance covers injured dogs and cats at no extra cost, so... Wait, the guy stood up when I stood up. He's on the phone. He's looking right at me. Oh, wait, it's just my reflection. Don't tell anyone about this.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Pet coverage not available in New Hampshire and North Carolina.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily podcast on the Los Angeles Lakers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
And we're live. Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast, live Christmas Day edition. The Lakers get a win. Maurice Bates hates everybody, so he didn't let them get tacos. But, you know, I'll just take a win, especially given how the season has gone recently. I'm joined by Harrison Fagan. Before we actually get into the show, make sure you're following it on Audio Boom, iTunes, Silver Screen and Roll, TuneIn, Stitcher, and Today's Fast Break. Make sure you're using the promo code LOLAKERS on SeatGeek and MacWeldon. And make sure you're using the promo code LAKERS10 on BetDSI.com. So, Harrison, how'd your Christmas treat you? You look particularly festive. You went with the shirt and hat combo. I went with the tree and hat combo.
I'm feeling pretty festive, man. That was a fun fourth quarter before, you know, excusing all of kind of the agonizing stuff at the start of it when it looked like they were going to blow that lead. That was fun. Russell came back in. They were able to take control back of the game. I had a good holiday otherwise, spent some time with my family. I'm feeling particularly festive, as those of you that are watching live can see. And yeah, it was a good day. And you mentioned Mo Spates briefly, so I can kind of see us into talking about the game. I, for one, was not surprised he played well, because bearded husky guys usually are able to move a little faster on Christmas.
That is not anywhere near as bad or good, or I don't know how we want to put that, as my Alfred Payton joke that I had yesterday. So
that got a little chuckle. That was, I think that counts. That was solid.
So about the game, it was kind of a weird one, right? They started out really poorly. You thought, oh great, the Lakers are going to get blown out by the Chris Paul-less, Blake Griffin-less Los Angeles Clippers.
By the way, can we just briefly, Chris Paul's outfit? You tweeted that he looked like a poop emoji, and that was about the only way to describe that suit. If you guys didn't watch the game, you need to go look up some people roasting Chris Paul's suit on Twitter. That was not the strongest fashion choice. Come on, Chris, you can get better clothes than that.
I have family in town, and last night we were up playing Clue, and it looked like something Colonel Mustard would wear, like Professor Plum if he decided to wear a different color other than purple. Like that, I could totally see Professor Mustard. He could have been Professor Mustard tonight.
I do not understand that reference at all, but I'm sure it was funny to people who have played.
You've never played Clue? What? All right, we aren't even going to talk about the Lakers.
Are you going to tell me to get a clue?
Nice. All right, we're done. We're done. Right, yeah.
Okay. So this got sloppy, but anyway, the Blake Griffin-less, the Chris Paul-less Clippers. The first half, it didn't look great against them. That's for sure. I mean, the only guy, or at least out of the young guys that really showed up to play right out of the gate, was Brandon Ingram. The Clippers wouldn't like him when he's angry. He had that nice tip dunk. He looked aggressive tonight, which is not something we normally see from him. He's usually just kind of floating around out there. He almost looks like he glides, but tonight there was a little bit of extra kind of kick to him, I guess. I think the young guy's tired of losing.
And it's kind of interesting we're talking about a little extra kick on a night where Draymond Green played. So
stretch. That was a stretch. I'll give it to you.
But the – all right, so Brandon Ingram, I thought – so one thing I've noticed in Brandon Ingram's game recently is he's being a lot more aggressive getting himself ready to be hand-checked, right? Where for most of the season, anytime he's driving to the basket, if a defender kind of gives him a little shove, gives him a little hand-check, he gets knocked off course. So what Ingram has done to counter that type of defense, that physicality – is he's just dribbling right at the defender's top shoulder and really putting a, you know, he's putting the onus on either the referees to call the hand check because it
makes which they a lot of times don't.
they still are not. The refs were bad tonight. I was not thrilled with the refs tonight.
Yeah, I mean for both sides. They just did not call a strong game. I don't think either locker room probably felt very happy with the refs.
No. And the whistles were kind of late. But anyway, but back to Ingram, what is happening is he's either getting, you know, a hand check called for him, you know, once every blue moon or so, or he's knocking that defender back on his back foot and it enables him to get to the basket, you know, a step or two quicker with a little bit more rhythm. So I hope that continues as the season goes along, because while he might not appear very strong, he obviously isn't strong by any type of NBA standard. You can make yourself stronger by just forcing yourself to play physically with more physicality. And tonight, Austin Rivers did not appreciate it. He slapped Ingram after the play. Ingram kind of responded with like a pseudo push while he was walking away, and that somehow earned Ingram a tech, which I found interesting.
I wrote about this briefly during one of my short form things during the game, but I liked Ingram's response that he just came right back and he got that tip dunk that I talked about before, and mm-hmm. he didn't let his anger affect him in a negative way. So the power from Kobe Bryant's locker is starting to get into him. We're starting to see dark Ingram, and I am all for it. I'm ready for angry Ingram.
Oh man, we got to do, would somebody out there do the Ingram with the hood thing, you know? Anywho.
No, that's going to be him all the time. He's going to be permanent current evil Kermit meme Ingram. we could find something catchier than that to call him.
Nothing is more like, they're going to put this podcast in some kind of time warp thing. And in 2023, they're going to ask, wait, what the hell are these Laker guys talking about Kermit for?
Yeah, that's probably not going to be a reference that survives much longer, but it works. I think most of our listeners probably understand what the Kermit meme is. But getting past Ingram, another guy that I thought his physicality kind of helped the Lakers. Really, we don't have to go individually guy by guy. I just thought the Lakers as a whole, their physicality helped them. Mozgov was boxing out a lot. I saw Darius Soriano, Forum Blue and Gold, pointed out on Twitter, and he was absolutely right that Mozgov's box outs were really helping the other Lakers secure rebounds. They were keeping DeAndre Jordan off the boards at the very least. Luol Deng took advantage of some smaller guys. Julius Randle is even more terrifying now that he has dad strength. It's just the whole team was really aggressive and physical tonight, I felt like.
And the big thing with
especially Mozgov, in the second half.
The big thing with Mozgov rebounding or helping out rebounding the way he is there, if he's just focused on boxing out his guy and everybody around him so that other Lakers can get the rebound, is that means the Lakers can get into their transition that much more quickly, where they don't have to worry about an outlet pass. If it's Mozgov doing the boxing out and you have Randall getting the board, now the Lakers are immediately in some kind of at least secondary transition type of set. Whereas that was kind of frustrating when Roy Hibbert was in LA, was that he wasn't doing that as much, and the Lakers were
Well, I think he did do that to some. I think a lot of why Randall was able to get so many rebounds last year was because Hibbert did that. It was one of the few kind of things that he did do okay.
Well, okay, so I'll put it like this. I'll walk that back then, and I'd say that even if it was taking place, the Lakers somehow still weren't getting into transition as quickly as you'd like with Julius Randle. Yeah. Julius Randle getting into the and tonight you saw it. Like the Lakers get a lot more easy baskets before, you know, if they can somehow score before the other defense sets up. It's harder to score on a defense that is already set, especially one like the Clippers that have played together now for, it feels like, 27 years.
Right, yeah, but I mean, they were missing a lot of those guys tonight, which is something that we do have to acknowledge. I mean, I'm not going to begrudge any Lakers fans that want to get excited about this win. They finally closed the game out down the stretch after blowing so many leads and getting blown out of a whole road trip. So a win is a win at this point. When you're the Lakers, you have to take that, and you can get excited about it, that at least the slump is over. But the Clippers were missing Blake Griffin and Chris Paul tonight. J.J. Redick left early with an injury. Doc Rivers didn't even put DeAndre Jordan back in the fourth quarter, I don't think, if I remember correctly. Yep. And so that was not the full Clippers team, but the Lakers are banged up too. We found out that Larry Nance Jr. is going to be out for another 4 weeks, which isn't great for the team. And, you know, they're dealing with their own injuries. I don't even think D'Angelo Russell is all the way back, really. Even though he was very good tonight, the Lakers were much better while he was on the floor.
That was the next point I was going to make regarding D'Angelo Russell. Is it's good. I hope Laker fans out there, even if you're just box score watching, you're not going to be able to pick this up. And there are some stats that back this up as well. But the Lakers look like a different team out there when D'Angelo Russell is on the court. He manages the offense. He manages everybody out there. You know, the system better than any of the Lakers' other point guards. And it's good that you can see that. It's a noticeable thing already, you know, in this, his second season, that he's making that kind of impact.
Yeah, he had the second highest plus minus on the team. And again, we've talked about why that's not a perfect stat, but tonight I think it was reflective of his value while he was on the floor. And he played 32 minutes, so it's not like it was some small sample size thing either. That was the second most on the team, which is, I know, something else that a lot of people have been waiting to see. He got 14 points. He was a plus 14, second only to Nick Young, who was a plus 24. And Nick Young's just been unbelievable. I still don't understand it, but at this point, I'm just rolling with it.
Yep.
Yeah, and I just thought that Russell, his passing, his shooting, just everything that he does makes the Lakers' offense run so much more smoothly. And you would think that people would be getting that by now after how just awful they looked while he was out for the most part. But you still see it. People are calling him a bust, things like that. It's going to come around for him. His defense still is not good, but again, he's 20 years old. This is the kind of stuff that's going to come with experience. And the fact that the Lakers look so much better on offense with him out there than with anyone else, I think you can't ignore that.
Yeah, it's night and day when he's out there on the court. And look, if there was another competent point guard on the team that the Lakers could trust, then sure. Then, you know, maybe we'd be having a different conversation right now, because there isn't really another competent point guard that's healthy on the Lakers roster. So it stands out all the more when D'Angelo Russell is on the floor compared to, you know, like Huertas, or if Clarkson is trying to be a point guard, if Ingram is trying to point guard, if Lou is trying to be a point guard. It really stands out when Russell is out there compared to those guys.
And Lou's had his moments where the team looks great when he's out there just because he's raining fire, but it's not really necessarily it's not as cohesive and as pretty looking as when, and as seemingly as sustainable as when Russell does it.
I want to go back and look at the game, and I might wind up doing this, but there was the stretch where people were kind of freaking out that they might give up, they might cough up that double digit fourth quarter lead.
I was fine. It was fine.
If you look, Harrison's hands have been bleeding from biting his fingernails. But I'd like to see when, you know, the Lakers kind of put it out of reach, how closely that correlated with D'Angelo Russell's reentrance into the game late in the fourth.
I mean, his plus minus would paint the picture that it was very closely correlated.
Yeah, so that's good to see. That's about all I have from this game. Again, the point is easy to make for like Clipper fans would be perfectly fine to point out the fact that, yeah, they we're missing a couple really good players.
There is, I feel like there is one more point to make from the game. I know we were trying to keep the show briefer, but the from tonight's game, I do think that, you know, we have to acknowledge again, Luke Walton is experiencing some growing pains, I think, as a rookie coach. He definitely, we talked about this a couple podcasts ago, I think, but he's sticking with the bench a little bit too long, in my opinion. He's giving them a little bit too long of a leash, I would say. Especially, I'm not enamored with the Thomas Robinson thing.
Well, I don't think he has many options, right?
Yeah, that's true. I mean,
like I would imagine
I don't know that Robinson needs to play. I don't know that Robinson needs to play. How many? He played 16 minutes tonight. I guess that's not that bad, but I feel like you could have given a couple more of those to Randall as a small ball center. Honestly, I think they erred by not putting Mozgov back in at some point in the fourth quarter. I mean, it ended up working out, but he was so good in the third. I thought they maybe should have went back to him.
Yeah, I will grant you that point. Like, both these things aren't mutually exclusive, the 2 points I'm about to make. I will grant you.
And I'm not saying that Luke's a bad coach. No, I'm saying that he's a rookie coach, and that there are, like, we have to acknowledge when he makes mistakes or when we feel like he makes mistakes, because we have to be fair. We definitely pointed out the last coach's mistakes plenty.
Absolutely. I completely agree. And your criticism is valid. Like, your criticism can be valid. And I can also add to that criticism that I also think it's nice that he is giving legitimate looks to people, to different lineups, to different people across the roster. Because again, the wins and losses this season, now Jim Buss's statements might paint a different picture, but wins and losses this year don't matter nearly as much as figuring out what the Lakers have with each and every guy on the roster, right? Now, the Lakers probably know that they have a corpse in Metta World Peace. They probably know that they have a non-playable point guard in Marcelo Huertas. So they have an idea there. Like, they're figuring that out. But with Thomas Robinson and with Tarik Black kind of dinged up right now, they kind of want to see, like, okay, what might we have here? How big a difference is there between Tarik Black and Thomas Robinson? Might Robinson present a cheaper alternative to Black? You know, if the Lakers decide they want to build their roster in a different way. I'm not saying that's what they're going to do. But I do like that, you know, because I had this conversation with somebody on Twitter today that they said something along the lines of, like, wow, Deng is a completely different player at the four.
Yeah,
and it's been forced on the Lakers.
And even at the three, he's been okay over the last little stretch.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But it's nice that we now know, we're now seeing that. Like, the beef last year with the previous coach was, Why are we trying to win these games with the same rotation?
Yeah, let's try something new. I feel you.
Yeah. So I agree that it would be nice to get Mozgov more minutes in the fourth quarter, especially you want to reward somebody for playing as well as he was. But I also think that with Thomas Robinson, I think this is kind of a pseudo tryout for Robinson. And I could see why Luke might, you know, be looking at this as we'll see how Robinson can produce in this situation. And then when Black gets back, we'll get back to more logical rotations.
Yeah, that's fair.
I mentioned the Jim Buss stuff, and that's what we're going to finish with here before my computer dies on me. Go ahead and give us a quick summary of what went on there with his statements. He talked about the deadline. He talked about the timeline. Let's hear it.
Okay, so Bill Oram of the Orange County Register wrote a really excellent feature, as he is kind of want to do. He wrote a feature about Jeannie Buss and her style of running the Lakers, and the major theme in it I would say he almost came in like one of those characters that just steals every scene he's in a movie, and Jim Buss was that guy in this feature piece. He just kind of jumped in with quotes, and that ended up probably being the most meaningful information from, like, a future perspective that there is. So I would encourage everybody to go read that in the Orange County Register, maybe even pick up a copy. But anyway, the quotes from Jim Buss were talking about his quotes, and he was talking about the deadline, and he said these were quotes from 3 or 4 years ago. Those were what the path was supposed to be. So he's kind of saying, you know, the deadline might have been misunderstood a little bit. Maybe that's not exactly, it wasn't a hard timeline of 3 years. And then he followed that up with, if I feel the strides have been made and the team is going in a very positive, not just a positive, a very positive direction, I don't see a switch happening. So Jim Buss is not lowering his standards. He doesn't want Laker fans, he doesn't want just positive. He wants very positive, okay? Mm-hmm. And I'm enjoying the visual element of this podcast right now. And he just, and then he followed it up. He said, it's hard to comment on something that hasn't happened yet. We're assuming the Lakers will not be in a position for me to stay confident about me staying in that position. You're trying to predict where we're going to be. If we end up being the worst of the bottom three teams, I can say you're right, but I don't think we are. And I guess he said he doesn't really expect to be going anywhere. So, and he finally ended it with, I think it would be a big mistake on the Lakers' part to make any switches. So I just, real quick before we get into his comments, I want to talk to our boss, David Locke. David, I feel like you would be making a really big mistake if you moved on from me and Anthony. I feel like we're doing a great job, man. It's a rebuilding situation. You know, I think, hey, if we're bottom three podcasts on the network, then sure. But I have confidence that's not where we're going to be at the end of the year.
I kind of feel bottom three podcast. I kind of feel like we should have had this conversation with him without wearing Santa hats.
We'll just send him the audio. That's
please take us seriously. Hold on. I'm not wearing this anymore.
All right. So Jim Buss's comments.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on this? I think you've been a harsher critic of this front office regime than I have.
So here's the thing. I understand why it keeps on coming up. Like I get it to a certain extent.
It's a big deal. That we have no idea who is going to be running the Lakers after this summer.
Like, here's the thing. If they're going to continue to be so ambiguous about this, stop bringing it up. Like, if you're going to continue to bring it up, explain to us what exactly is going on here. What are your actual expectations? What needs to happen for you to feel comfortable sticking around?
I 100% agree. There needs to be some type of clarity. There needs to be either clarity on what the expectations are, or there needs to be clarity on who's running the team. Because right now, the franchise just looks like it's drifting in the wind. And, you know, I wrote about this. This is not the type of thing that makes the Lakers look good to free agents. It doesn't make them look good to fans. It doesn't make them look good to other front offices that maybe think that they can take advantage of them if they're desperate to make a win now move. Mm-hmm. It's just, there is no positive in there being so much uncertainty around this right now.
So for those who don't know, and I've said this a couple times at this point, but for those who don't know, I come from a public relations background. That's what I used to do before this.
Oh, really?
Did you know?
but you never talk about it.
Our company, the firm that I used to work for, our statement was pretty clear. Either you tell your story, or somebody out there is going to tell it for you. And when that person or when that entity tells that story for you, you can't control your story at that point. And what's going on now is they're simultaneously telling their story. They're saying all the dumb stuff that you don't want said about you publicly without actually controlling the story. And what you want to do is you want to get out in front of it and say, look, if the Lakers are in 11 spots and up, I keep my job. You know, the 11th spot and up contending for the playoffs in the West, right? If they finish in the bottom three again and they lose their pick and you take that kind of hit, then all right, I will step away. But here's the thing too. This isn't like the typical president of team operations that's talking here. This is a part owner.
Yeah, and a sibling of the other part owner who is his boss.
It's not like this
story. It's a totally bizarre situation.
It's not like this story ends if he gets fired. He's still going to be around. It's still going to be super awkward. It's not like they're going to buy him out. He's not going to want to be bought out. That's a golden goose. It's going to continue to be a moneymaker forever.
Yep.
So, again, it stinks because as an organization, and not, you know, this recent stretch of losing notwithstanding, like that, you know, but the Lakers right now, compared, we had this conversation with Geeter. The Lakers right now are in a much better spot than they were 2 years ago. And they have assets to continue to get better. And yet for some reason, the narrative keeps spinning around back to this really stupid, annoying, and completely ambiguous story that nobody seems willing to control. And all the fans are left here thinking is, well, what does this actually mean? Should I actually get invested in a D'Angelo Russell? Should I get invested in a Brandon Ingram? Should I watch Jordan Clarkson and try to, you know, consider what kind of trades he might be able to return for the Lakers?
Yeah, the thing is, there should be so much positivity about this young core, and there just can't be because there's so much uncertainty, and the discourse about it has gotten so poisonous.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, I apologize if it came across as I was yelling it. Especially the visuals of this are pretty funny. I'm yelling at fans. About Lakers ownership with a Christmas tree behind me and a Santa hat on. But it's definitely
the weirdest podcast top five weirdest podcast we've ever done.
I dressed up as Kermit the Frog, I think, one time. And Batman.
Yeah, that's true.
All right, but yeah, this was fun. I hope everybody, again, if you want to find the rest of our shows.
Before we go, we got one more storyline that I'm not sure if you missed over the weekend, but Meta World Peace wants to make sure that we know that he has stopped having sex on the road so that he can play better. He spoke in a New York Times piece this weekend as only Meta World Peace could, and he was talking about back-to-backs, and he said that he would play like garbage. So, quote, when I got older and actually wanted to win, I would drink a lot of water, eat a lot of veggies, go to bed once you get into the city. No sex, nothing like that, because all that stuff adds up. I like that no one asked him about sex at all, and he just told this reporter, like, hey, just so you know, I'm not having sex on the road anymore, and I think it's going to really help me.
All right, Meta, you can go back to having sex. It's not working.
Well, I think he meant overall, like, I think he was talking about back to the 2012 season, but still, that is only Meta World Peace talks about whether or not he's having sex on the road on the record, and nobody makes a big deal about it because they're like, oh, that's just Meta.
Yeah, that's a big reason why he isn't getting criticized. Anyway, we'll go ahead and put a wrap. We'll put a bow on this one, if you would. A Christmas bow.
I like that.
Yep. This was a lot of fun. I hope everybody enjoyed watching. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. We had a nice audience tonight. We will be back at it as the week goes along. We'll kind of gauge what kind of interest, what kind of storylines the Lakers are up to as people kind of come back from the holidays and get ready for another one. New Year's is right around.
It may not be a daily podcast this week. We're still trying to figure that out right now, but we're definitely going to have at least a couple more episodes for you.
Absolutely. So again, to those who celebrated today, Merry Christmas. To those who celebrated Hanukkah, Happy Hanukkah. Whatever you might have celebrated, I hope you really enjoyed it.
Or if you didn't celebrate, we still appreciate you. As long as you listen to the show, we're good with you.
That's a good way to put it. Stay safe. If you're traveling back home from visiting family, whatever you might be tonight, please stay safe. Drive safe out there. And we will talk to everybody again either tomorrow or a couple days from now. Merry Christmas.
All right. Thanks, Anthony.